Todd, I need to be through at 10:35. Is that right? Around there? Okay. Well, suffice it to say right now, I'm really glad to be able to be with you this week during this gospel endeavor. And I know that we're under some time constraint during this Bible class, so I'm going to reserve the personal remarks that I want to make for later on. I want to talk to you in the Bible class about the parable of the talents, so if you'd like, you can turn now to the book of Matthew, chapter 25, and we'll be reading from there in just a moment. But before we do that, there are three questions that I want us to ask and answer in order to help prepare us for the reading of this parable. And the first question that I want us to think about is, what is a talent? And a talent is a sum of money. Now, later on in the application part of this study, we're going to be talking about what we usually think of when thinking about talents. You know, he sure has a talent in song leading, or she has a talent in encouraging others. But that is in the application part. But a talent in the parable of the talents is a considerable sum of money. And the second question that I want us to ask and answer is, what is a steward? Because that's what these three servants were. They were stewards. And a steward is someone who's been entrusted with the possessions of someone else, and then he's been given the charge or the obligation to care for those possessions as the master sees fit. The third question that I want us to ask is, what was the master's expectation of those three stewards? Well, he put some talents, or that is money, into their hands, and he went away for a while. And his expectation was that when he got back, he'd have more money than he did when he left. You know, you might do the same kind of thing. You might put your money into the hands of a money manager, and you would hope that that money would grow, at least keep up with inflation. And so it is that God has put into our hands talents, money. God has put into our hands possessions, abilities, opportunities for doing good. And he expects us to use those things he's given us to his glory. All right, now that we've considered those three questions, I want us to now read together the parable of the talents, Matthew 25, beginning with verse 14. Jesus said, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country, who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his own ability, and immediately he went on a journey. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. And likewise he who had received 2 gained 2 more also. But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them." You see, the day of reckoning came for those three stewards, and the day of reckoning will someday come for us as well. "So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, 'Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I've gained 5 more talents besides them.' His Lord said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things, I'll make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord.' He also, who had received 2 talents, came and said, 'Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I've gained 2 more talents besides them.' His Lord said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things, I'll make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord.' Then he who had received the 1 talent came and said..." Now you see, this man, he's going to make excuses for himself. He wasn't faithful. "Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. But his Lord answered and said to him, 'You wicked and lazy servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have...'" Now here was the master's expectation of all three of those stewards. "'You ought to have deposited my money with the bankers. And at my coming, I would have received back my own with interest.
Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now that we've read the parable, I also want to say to you, by way of introduction, that there are 4 things that I want us to realize from the parable of the talents, which is another way of saying there are 4 points that I want to make from this parable. And the 4th point is really the main point of this parable. But also I want to say to you, by way of introduction, that having an appreciation of this parable will help us to guard our hearts against 4 things that are harmful to us. 4 things that we want to keep out of our lives. And we'll keep these things out of our lives if we're willing to apply the parable of the talents. All right, the first thing that I want us to realize from this parable is that what we have is given to us by the master. Now you see, what those 3 stewards had, they didn't really earn, but their master entrusted them with these things. And whatever you have is yours because of God. You didn't earn it. It is something that you have because of God. You know, before the offering, sometimes a brother will lead us in prayer and he'll say something like, God, thank you for our jobs. Now, do we really believe that we have our jobs because of God, or is that just a little hypocritical, insincere thing that we do when we say, God, thank you for our jobs? And if we have our jobs because of God, well, then what about our possessions and what about our money? And you know, sometimes in leading us in prayer, a brother will say, God, we thank you for life itself. Now, do we really believe that we have life, breath on this earth because of God? Or again, is that just a little hypocritical, insincere thing we do when we say, God, thank you for life itself? James said in James chapter 1, verse 17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. And you know, if we could just realize from the parable of the talents that what we have is given to us by the Master to use to His glory, well then surely this would help us to guard our hearts against sinful pride. Pride is something that we need to keep out of our lives. In the Gospel of Luke chapter 12, we have another parable I want us to look at for a little while this morning. And in Luke 12, beginning with verse 16, it says, then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. You know, when you read about this man, he was obviously a very selfish, self-centered individual. But couldn't you also say that he was a very prideful individual? And he thought that he was just in control of everything. This prideful individual thought that he was in control of his own future, as is seen in verse 19, when he said to himself, why, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. He said, it's retirement time, and I happen to know that I have a lot of time left here on this earth, and I'm going to enjoy it. He thought he was in control of his own future. But not only did he think that he was in control of his future, he thought that he had been in control of his past. And that all of these goods, all of these crops that he had accumulated on the earth, that he had done it. You see, there's no reference to God there in his speech in Luke chapter 12. No indication that he gave any glory or thanksgiving at all unto God for what he had. It was as though he had done it. But you remember how this parable started? Luke 12, 16. Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. Folks, it was the ground that yielded plentifully. How much thought time do you think this rich man gave to the the soil, the ground in which his crops grew. How much time do you think he spent thinking about the sunshine and the rain which caused his crops to grow? How much time did he spend thinking about the laws of nature that have been set in motion by God, and that without the laws of nature set in motion by God, he would have absolutely nothing at all? Now, I want you to think about something that you have right now that you're just right proud of, you know, rightfully so. It may be some ability that you have or something you have in your possession. Well, I tell you, you wouldn't have it if not for God. And if we could just realize that what we have has been given to us by the Master and by our Lord in heaven, then surely this would help us all to guard our hearts against sinful pride. But a second thing I want us to realize from the parable of the talents is that what we have belongs to the Master still. So the first thing I want us to realize from the parable is that what we have is given to us by the Master. But secondly, I want us to realize that what we have belongs to the Master still. You see, what those three stewards in this parable, what they had, well, you see, it was something that really wasn't theirs. What they had really wasn't theirs. It was theirs to use for a little while in their master's interest, but it wasn't really theirs. And whatever you have is yours to use, but it's not yours to keep. And you think about that house you live in right now. Who's going to live in that house you're living in 30 years from now, if the earth is still standing, and if that house is still standing? Who will live in that house 30 years from now? You know, there's just a real good chance it will not be you, but you're using it for a while, and someone else will come along and use it for a while. And if we could just realize that what we have has been given to us by the Master, and what we have belongs to the Master still, then this would help us to guard our hearts against covetousness. Folks, covetousness is something that we need to keep out of our lives. Now, again, the parable of that rich farmer. What was it that occasioned that parable? Well, in Luke 12, backing up to verse 13. We started with verse 16 a while ago. Now Luke 12, verse 13. Then one from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." You know, there have always been too many family squabbles over money and over the family inheritance. But Jesus said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Then he spoke a parable to them. Now, why is Jesus speaking this parable to them? Because he's teaching against covetousness. Verse 15, "Take heed and beware of covetousness." Next verse, "Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. He thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this, I'll pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. God said to him, you fool, tonight you're going to die. Then whose will those things be which you have provided while you were here on this earth? And you know that's the way it is with every one of us. We're born, we live, and while we live for a little while on this earth, God blesses us and he puts talents, money, into our hands, along with possessions, abilities, opportunities for doing good. And then we die. And when we die, Well, then we leave our money and our possessions behind for somebody else to use for a little while. And then after we die, again, we go into an eternity. You know, when we die and we go into an eternity, it's not going to matter to us then whether or not we got a fair share of the family inheritance. And when we die and we go into an eternity, it's not really going to matter to us then whether we find ourselves in a devil's hell or at home with the Lord in heaven. When we die and we go into an eternity, it's not going to matter to us then whether or not we lived in the finest house, wore the finest clothes, drove the finest automobiles. When we die and we go into an eternity, it's not going to matter to us then whether or not we could preach better than some other people, or whether or not we could lead singing better than some other people, or whether or not we could teach Bible class better than some other people. But do you know what it is that is really going to matter to us when we die and we go into an eternity? How did we use what we had while we had time and opportunity? Whether we identify with the five-talent man, the two-talent man, or the one-talent man in terms of ability, how did we use what we had? And that's all that's going to matter to us when we die and go into an eternity. When we die and we go into an eternity, we're going to realize then that a man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things that he possesses. And thus, if we can just realize from the parable of the talents that what we have is given to us by the Master. And what we have, it still belongs to him. We're just using it for a little while, hopefully to his glory. And surely that would help us to guard our hearts against covetousness. But there's a third thing then I want us to realize from the parable of the talents. And that is that God will judge men not merely for doing wrong, but for not doing right. Let me say that again. God will judge men not merely for doing wrong, but for not doing right. In Matthew chapter 25, we see that the one talent man, he came to give an account of his stewardship. And so we read now in the book of Matthew chapter 25 and verse 26. Matthew 25 verse 26, his Lord answered and said to him, "You wicked and lazy servant." Now, I would think that he was probably condemned then, wouldn't you, if his Lord addressed him as "you wicked and lazy servant." Also in verse 30, "And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." He was an unprofitable servant, and he was condemned. But he was not condemned because he was a fornicator, or because he was an adulterer, or a thief, or a murderer. He was condemned for not doing what was expected of him. Also, I would say to you that the one talent man was not condemned because he lacked ability, because he had ability. And if you don't see that, then maybe you'll see it by when you read verse 15. Matthew 25, 15, "This master, to one of his servants, he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his own ability." The one talent man had ability, but he was not condemned because he lacked ability. He was condemned because he wasn't faithful. He was not faithful in putting to use the ability that he had. You know, sometimes I'm afraid that we get to thinking as Christians, you know, if I just had more ability, then my influence could really be felt, and I could be an effective worker in the local congregation of which I'm a part if I just had more ability. Folks, if we fail, our failures are not due to lack of ability, but our failures are due to lack of faithfulness, just not being faithful in putting to use the ability that we have. So the one talent man, he's come to give an account of his stewardship. Well, the 5-talent man, he comes to give an account of his stewardship. And so you read now in Matthew 25, verse 21, "His Lord said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord.' He also, who had received 2 talents, came and said, 'Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I've gained 2 more talents besides them.' His Lord said to him," now listen to this, this sounds familiar, I think we just read it, verse 23. "His Lord said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord.'" You see, exactly the same thing was said to the 2-talent man that was said to the 5-talent man. "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I'll make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord." And, you know, that might be surprising to us, because the 5-talent man, he achieved more than the 2-talent man. The 5-talent man, he went out and gained 5 other talents. The 2-talent man, he went out and gained 2 other talents. Now, 5's more than 2, isn't it? So the 5-talent man, he achieved more than the 2-talent man. I have somebody here nodding. Yes, 5's more than 2. And so it might be surprising to us that they would hear the same great commendation and praise from their Lord and Master. But you know, that ought to be of comforting to us and give us some assurance, because I think a lot of us identify with that 2-talent man. I don't identify personally so much with that 5-talent man. And I do not want to identify with that 1-talent man. But the 2-talent man, he's more in the middle. But yet he heard the same praise and commendation as did the 5-talent man. Now let's put that on practical terms. Here's an elder in the Lord's church, and he's been entrusted with a lot of responsibility, and he has accomplished much in his service to the Lord, this faithful elder has. And this faithful elder, he dies in the Lord. On the other hand, you have a brand new convert to the Lord, someone who's struggling to do what's right. He's brand new in the faith. And he does not accomplish very much in his service to the Lord, and the reason he doesn't is because he dies as a new convert. But even though he dies as a new convert, he dies faithful to the Lord. You know that 2-talent, or that new convert, he will hear the same great praise and commendation as did that faithful elder who also died in the Lord. "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. I'll make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord." You know, I'm convinced that the master here in the parable of the talents, he did not expect his 3 stewards to be equal in achievement. And the reason I say that is because, again, Matthew 25, verse 15, "To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability." That's saying that responsibility was given to each one as the master thought that each one could handle, to each one according to his ability. I do not believe that he expected the 2-talent man to achieve exactly what the 5-talent man would achieve. But you know, while he did not expect them to be equal in achievement, I do believe that he expected them all, the 5-talent man, the 2-talent man, and the 1-talent man, he expected them all to be equal in something. He expected them all to be equal in effort. Now, do you think that our Lord and our Master in heaven, do you think he expects us all to achieve exactly the same thing in his kingdom? Now, he knows that we have varying abilities. He knows that some have been members of the church for a long time. He knows there are some who are brand new in the faith. He knows that we have different abilities, and he does not expect us all to achieve exactly the same thing. But our Lord and our Master in heaven does expect us to be equal in effort. Whether we identify with the 5-talent man, the 2-talent man, or the 1-talent man in terms of ability, our Master in heaven wants us to be equal in effort. And it should be our aim, our sincere aim, to say unto our Lord, "Lord, I'm trying. I'm doing what I can. I'm trying to do my best in keeping with my ability." You know, as a gospel preacher, I do not believe that I should measure myself against other preachers. I think as a preacher, I need to be measuring myself against my own abilities, and I need to try to be the best preacher that my equipment can be. Song leaders should not measure themselves against other song leaders. The song leaders, measure yourself against your own abilities and be the best song leader that you can be. And Bible class teachers, while you can be inspired by the examples of other Bible class teachers and song leaders, can be inspired by the diligence and the hard work, the dedication of other song leaders, Bible class teachers, do not measure yourself against other Bible class teachers, but measure yourself against your own abilities. You make up your mind, you're going to be the very best Bible class teacher that you can be. But you know, if we could just realize from the parable of the talents that God will judge men not merely for doing wrong, but for not doing right, just not being faithful and diligent and keeping with the ability that we have, then surely this would help us to guard our hearts against laziness. Laziness, just like sinful pride, just like covetousness, it's something that we need to keep out of our lives. In Matthew chapter 25 and verse 26, when the one talent man came to give an account of his stewardship, his Lord answered and said to him, "You wicked and lazy servant." Now, you know, we don't often identify wickedness with laziness. We may identify wickedness with robbing banks and murder and that kind of thing. But he said, "You wicked and lazy servant." Anything that's closely associated with wickedness, folks, I need to keep out of my life. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 10, verse 26, I believe this tells us how God feels about laziness. Proverbs 10, 26, "As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the lazy man to those who send him." He said, as smoke is an irritation to the eyes, so is a lazy man an irritation unto his employer. And so here's a man, he goes out to the job site, he's a supervisor, has these men who are working under him, and he goes away for a while, much like the master did in the parable of the talents. And when this supervisor, when he gets back, his expectation is that a certain amount of work is going to be accomplished. But when he gets back to the job site, he discovers that only about 1/4 of that work has been done. You know what that is to him? It's like smoke to the eyes. Isn't it an irritation? What is it unto our Lord and our Master in heaven when we act just like that one talent man? And we're not diligent. We're not faithful. We're lazy. We're not acting in keeping with the ability that God has given us. I tell you, it's like smoke to his eyes. It is an irritation to him. And it may be that on that final day, we would hear him say, "You wicked and lazy servant, and cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." If we could realize that God will judge men, not merely for doing wrong, but for not doing right, well, then this would help us to guard our hearts against laziness. But then there's the fourth thing that I want us to realize from the parable of the talents. And that is why this parable was given. To guard our hearts against being unprepared when Jesus comes again. You know, the context of this parable really goes back to Matthew chapter 24, or maybe even beyond that. But in the first part of Matthew chapter 24, and I'm not going to read all this for sake of time, I know we need to wind this up. But Jesus there is talking about the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. And the disciples, they hear his teaching and they say, "Well, Master, tell us, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming?" And Jesus in Matthew chapter 24, he said, with reference to the Lord's coming and judgment against Jerusalem, he said, there will be some definite signs. And he said, when you see the definite signs, it's time for you to run. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. But he said, when it comes to the final coming of the Lord in judgment, there will be no signs. And in Matthew 24, in verse 36, "But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. His return will be at a time when men are not expecting it, because there will be no signs." And then beginning in verse 45 of Matthew 24, now you see we're getting close to the parable of the talents. The parable of the talents starts in Matthew 25, verse 14. We're getting close. But now in Matthew 24, verse 45, he says that a faithful and wise servant will watch for his return. So in verse 50, the master of that servant, now that servant would be the one who's not faithful and wise. The master of that servant will come on a day when he's not looking for him, in an hour that he's not aware of. And then in Matthew 25, verses 1 through 13, there's the parable of the 10 virgins, 5 wise and 5 foolish. So Matthew 25, verse 3, those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. And thus, when the bridegroom came, they were not prepared. Verse 4, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. And thus, when the bridegroom came, they were prepared. Verse 13 of Matthew 25 forms a conclusion to the parable of the 10 virgins. And it says, watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. And the parable of the 10 virgins is saying, you need to be constantly watching and waiting and making sure that you are prepared for the coming of the bridegroom, Jesus Christ. Now, verse 14, next verse, the parable of the talents tells you how to do that. How do you make sure you're found watching and waiting and prepared when Jesus comes again? By making sure that you are found diligent, making sure that you are found busy in service to the Master. You see, watching for the coming of the Lord, that does not mean just to sit down, twiddle your thumbs, watch the skies, waiting for His return. According to the parable of the talents, watching and waiting and being prepared for the coming of the Lord means get up, get busy, recognize what your abilities are, act in keeping with those abilities, and make sure that when the Lord comes, you're found to pray in person. You're praying. Make sure that when the Lord comes, you're found to be a diligent student of the Scriptures. Make sure that when Jesus comes again, you're found doing His will. You're developing yourself spiritually. You're doing all that you can to please God. And then you're watching and waiting for His return. Will we make it our aim to be able to say in all sincerity, Lord, I'm trying. I'm doing what I can. And then we'll be ready when Jesus comes again. Thank you for your attention.